are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on this episode of the Elephant in the Room podcast is Yves Voyer, Global Disability and Inclusion Leader at IBM and the author of Turning Point, The Fall and Rise. Thank you, Yves, for being a guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast today. Really grateful to you for making time.
Thank you very much for having me, Sula. I really appreciate it.
To start with, tell us something about your journey.
So I live in Belgium. And if you have a screen in front of you, if you type the date of 12th of July 1987 on your favorite search engine, most likely you will not find any major event in the world for the vast majority of people. That day was just another day in their life. But for me, it was a little bit different. I was 21 at that time. I live in Belgium. And for once, the weather was great. The sun was shining. The sky was blue. And so I decided to go for a ride with my motorcycle. And I really had a great time. And all of a sudden, there were gravels in the road. And the back wheel of my motorcycle slipped on them. And I fell down into a kind of a gully. And I damaged my spinal cord. And as a result of this accident, I became a wheelchair user. As you can imagine, when you acquire disability as a result of an accident, you lose 90% of your self-confidence because you need to reinvent your identity. Basically, I would say that accepting your new situation is a journey. You go through a very different set of emotions, like frustration, denial, passivity, depression. And after all these negative moments, you can start to look at possibilities versus limitations. Some people may get stuck for the rest of their life at the depression stage. In other words, they will remain within their comfort zone. A wheelchair user will be interacting with other wheelchair users, or you will live outside of the normal society, I would say. And others, like myself, took another option, made a different choice, like trying to find a way to be the actor of my own life and trying to find a job and getting married and have kids, you know, all the things that maybe sound normal or basics for the vast majority of people that are not so easy when you acquire a disability or when you live with a disability.
Thank you, Yves, for sharing that. So you're the author of Turning Point, The Fall and Rise. What is the book about? Tell us what your thoughts were when you were writing.
Actually, this book, I wrote this book because it corresponded to a need. I mean, when you acquire a disability, you go through a different set of emotions. And people around you, your family, your friends, are kind of lost. Because one day, especially when you spend a lot of time in the hospitals or education center, I spent 8 months in these institutions. And when your parents come to visit you and your friends, you know, one day you welcome them with a big smile. And the day after, you want to cry or you don't want to see them, you know. So they don't understand what's going on, right? So the main purpose, and I wrote this book, was more to make people understand the different emotions that we go through and why our emotions may be so different one day from the other. This kind of book, you cannot write it when you're still yourself in this journey. You need to have some experience. You need to have a certain level of maturity in your own personal disability inclusion journey to be able to have enough distance to be able to write this book. So basically, the idea of this book was to really explain the different set of emotions and also make people comfortable saying, don't feel guilty or don't feel uncomfortable if the one you love is having all these emotions. It's part of the journey. There is no other option. You must. And then only when people have acquired a certain level of self-trust, then you can start building a new relationship with that person and be able to tangibly help them. Because basically, even if you have the best family around you, the best people, the person living with a disability must make the first step. It's my own decision whether I want to play an active role in the society where I live. Things may be different for people, but for people who acquired a physical disability, I would say, that allow them to have a certain level of independence, intellectual autonomy, this decision must be taken by the persons themselves. And then only that the people around them can help.
From your own experiences, what are the biggest challenges facing people with disabilities?
Basically, there are three major obstacles. One is accessibility. The level of accessibility in many countries, not to say in most countries, is very low. And there are different reasons for that. One of the reasons is the lack of awareness of the governments or institutions to make their environment, the workplace, and the infrastructures in general, the society in general, the country, as accessible as possible. The second reason, I would say, is more linked to the person themselves. As I said, if you don't feel confident enough to be the actor of your own life, it's extremely difficult to be comfortable enough to get out of your comfort zone and be confronted to accessibility obstacle or attitude obstacles. And this is really linking to the last obstacle that I mentioned, accessibility, personal issues, and other people's attitude. The way people look at you may be difficult to bear. And so basically, I would say that depending on where you are in your personal journey, these obstacles will be major or minor. Like, for instance, when you start acquiring a certain confidence in your ability to play an active role in your own life, you will be able to deal with accessibility issues. You will rely on your friends, the institutions, the family, the world of education to help you getting the skills you need to be able to find a job, etc. But psychologically speaking, you need to be confident and you need to understand that you cannot control everything. You can control what you do, what you say, but you cannot control what people think of you. And this is important because some people can waste their whole lifetime trying to please others. You must be yourself, regardless of what others think.
That's a very good point. The sense from some of the people that I have met is that people with disabilities are not expected to have an identity when other people take charge. Also, it's not necessarily something to do with age, but sometimes it's to do with where you are and your circumstances and which country you're born and your socioeconomic circumstances, etc. So what you're clearly stating is that having your identity and taking charge is something that is essential for moving forward.
Definitely, absolutely. As I said, when you acquire disability, you lose much of your self-confidence. And so it's quite tempting to expect everything from others. You will expect the institution, the government, to provide you with some financial support. You will expect the world of education to provide you with the skills you need. You will expect your family to be able to help you, etc. And this is important, but this is not enough. You also have to make your own choice. You also have to get out of your comfort zone, take challenges, accept failures. When I started to find a job, I cannot tell you how many CVs I sent and how many few answers I received, right? And this is part of the game. You must accept that all coins have two sides. And one is success, one is failure. And you'll learn much more from failures than from success, right? So every time I was said politely, when I will say something, I'm sorry, but your skills are not valued, etc. I knew that it was not so much my skills. It's more my disability. And that comes to the debate about mentioning your disability on the resume or not. It's strongly pushing for making things visible. Making my disability visible on my resume is something that conveys a message. It conveys the message that I'm confident with my status. Because if you don't do so, people who will welcome you either virtually or physically will be surprised to see you using a wheelchair. So it will kind of make a bad start for the conversation, because the nature of the conversation will be polluted by this bad surprise for the person welcoming you. Whereas if you mention your disability, I would say that 18 doors out of 20 may be closed.
Yeah.
But the two doors that remain open are true opportunities, true chances, because the person knows what. Having said that, you must, and I insist, you must mention your disability in your resume, but you must do it in a smart way. I mean, yeah. Do not put it on top of your CV in red. You know, this is not smart. This is not efficient. What I did on my CV is just, I mentioned it as a fact. As a result of a motorcycle accident occurring in 1987, I became a wheelchair user. Period. That's enough. I don't need to say anything else. That's a fact. You know, I'm a man, I am white, and I'm using a wheelchair. That's part of my identity. It's not my entire identity. I don't relate only to the fact that I use a wheelchair, but I also use a wheelchair. It's part of who I am, whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
And so it's part of who I am, so there is no reason to hide.
So we know that people with disabilities are significantly underrepresented across businesses. What can businesses do to address the imbalance? There are 1 billion disabled people in the world, and organizations are probably not thinking of how they should utilize the talent and the capabilities of this group of people sufficiently.
This is absolutely true. This is key, really, because there is not only a lack of awareness, it's also a culture issue. What I mean by that, you may be familiar with the three traditional models around disability that are social model, charity model, as well as medical model, right? But this is not enough. This is not enough from a corporate perspective to be better at including people with disabilities in your workforce. What I mean by that is that there is one major shift that must be addressed from a personal and business perspective. Disability, regardless of the type of disability we refer to, whether it's visible disability, physical conditions, cognitive condition, whatever, stop looking at it from an individual perspective and look at it from an environmental perspective. What I mean by that is, if I am a manager or an employer, the only question I should ask myself is, what can I do to make my environment accessible for that person to be as productive as anybody else in the workplace? If I think about it from an environmental perspective, I will succeed in my disability inclusion policy because I will have the right mindset. I will not think, I'm not going to hire that person who's using a wheelchair because I don't have accessible restroom, because I don't have elevators, I don't have enough space for that person to move around. This is not true. The only question I should ask myself as an employer is, what can I do to make my restroom accessible, to make my workplace accessible, to make sure that that person will have enough room to move around in the office? That's as simple as that. You know, people will object saying, it might cost money, etc., which is true. But the vast majority of people with disabilities will not need major investment in terms of accommodation or adjustment. And managers or employers should also think that a universal design perspective where wheelchair user will go, anyone can go. And a very concrete example, automatic door openers are very useful for people using a wheelchair, right? Because especially when you have a very heavy door to push, it's not easy when you use a wheelchair to do so. But it will also benefit people who wear cumbersome boxes, for instance, or people having a temporary physical limitation, or if a woman is pregnant, it would be also very useful to have this kind of facility in the workplace. So if you think beyond disability and if you think authentic inclusion, that will be much more impactful. So my recommendation to the business is, think about disability from an environmental issue. Stop thinking about it from a personal perspective. And second, if you think about preparing your workplace to be disability inclusive, always think about the three A's. Three A's standing for accessibility, adjustment or accommodation, and attitude. The first two ones, accessibility and accommodation, is really about, as I said, what can I do to make my workplace both physically and digitally accessible to most people in my team? So the first two ones are maybe complex to put in place because it requires some logistics, some financial investment. But basically, these are possible. Whereas the attitude, the third A is the attitude, is much more difficult to tackle and will require much more patience, much more strategy to really change the mindset of people. It may take decades, honestly. And frankly, some people will never change. Some people will always be uncomfortable with differences in general, including disagreements. Yeah. And so you will not change them. But this is a very small portion of people. The vast majority of people do not feel comfortable because they are afraid of the unknown. And this is perfectly natural. So we need to confront them. We need to get people out of their comfort zone. And when I speak externally and face-to-face, of course, people see my wheelchair. And what I hope is that when the first time they look at me, they meet me, they will look at a wheelchair and a guy sitting on this wheelchair. And I hope that the next time we meet, they will see me, they will see Eve. And that will be a major difference in terms of relationship. And I could tell you that based on my own personal and professional experience, you must be clear about yourself. If you live with a disability, you need to be more the ambassador of yourself. You need to make the other person comfortable, right? Explaining what you can do and what you cannot do. And this is true in your personal life, and this is true in your professional life as well. You must be clear about your possibilities as well as your limitations. And you must communicate them, and you must communicate them smartly and effectively. I, for instance, in my role, I have a global role. So I spent much of my time prior to COVID in planes, taxis, hotels, whereas I'm labeled as a mobility impaired person. So it's kind of breaking the stereotypes. But I made clear to my employer at that time, to my manager, that yes, I will be able to travel, but not everywhere. I will not be able to be productive in a country where the level of accessibility is not good enough for me to be effective.
True.
I had to be honest. I had to say that. I didn't have to say, yes, I can go everywhere. You will see I'm the best. I can. No, that's not true. There are things you can control and there are things you cannot control. You cannot control the level of accessibility of the society in which you are or the country in which you are supposed to go. But you can control what you know about this country. You can control whether you will be effective or not. And so being clear about what your possibilities and your limits are and how to communicate them clearly and smartly to your employers.
Some great advice in there. You know, so when organizations are trying to attract talent, how do they ensure that they have within their shortlist some people with disabilities?
Absolutely. The first thing I would say to employers and recruiters in general is before starting hiring people with diverse abilities or disability, depending on which terminology you use, you should always prepare your workplace and your workforce. As I said, making sure that your workplace will be as accessible as possible, both physically and digitally. Prior to hiring people or to even thinking of hiring people with disabilities, because, you know, if you don't prepare your workplace and if you don't train your employees on how to interact in a confident manner with people with disabilities, the experience will be bad. Educating people is key prior to hiring people. Then, when your workplace is ready, both in terms of infrastructure and then, you can start working with external NGOs locally in your country that will be able to identify people with disabilities in the market. And it might be challenging, more challenging for different sectors. For instance, if you work in the IT sector, because of the nature of our business, the skills we would need in this space will be very specific around hybrid cloud, for instance, around AI. And so the level of education may be difficult to attain for people with disabilities in many countries where the access to a higher level of education, even lower level of education, is difficult because of accessibility issues, cultural issues, etc. So you may need to work with external NGOs who do have the expertise, and then you can put in place, I would say, an effective recruitment strategy. And my last recommendation to employers is start small. Do not try to boil the ocean. Try to be successful with two or three profiles regardless of the type of disability. And then once you're successful in the inclusion of two or three people, you will be able to be more ambitious and to establish your documented hiring strategy based on success. That would be my key recommendation.
How can organizations move from seeing this as the right thing to do or to seeing this as a critical part of their business strategy because people with disabilities bring that value into the organization?
I would say two things here. First, you do not have to hire a person with a disability. Yes, you heard me well. You do not have to hire a person with a disability. You have to hire a person that has the skills or, as I said, potential to help your business thrive. And if, by the way, that person happens to live with a disability, so be it. The responsibility of the employer is to provide me with a workplace where I will be able to be as productive as anybody else. And this is my responsibility as an individual living with a disability to show, to demonstrate that I can be as effective as possible. As I said already, the roles are distributed. It's not the employers that have the total responsibility. It's not the employee or the candidate having total responsibility. Yeah. Both of them have a role to play. And this is really key. So this would be my first recommendation.
Any organizations that are doing it well? Would you have some examples?
Well, my own employer, maybe. I've been working for IBM for 29 years. And so when I joined IBM in 1992, disability inclusion was even lower on the corporation radar than it is today. But still, regardless of the fact that I was using a wheelchair and regarding the fact that my resume was as thick as a razor blade in terms of qualifications, they decided to trust my ability to do the job that I was supposed to do at that time. And they provide me with some opportunities to grow my career, to acquire new skills, etc. And so basically, it's a question of culture. It's not so much a question of money or level of awareness. It's really about a culture of the corporation. And that's really important. It's really about how do you think holistically about people's value, regardless of whether I'm Black, whether I'm LGBT. But one of the main issues with diversity and inclusion policies in general is that it's quite tempting to put people in boxes.
Yeah.
The LGBT groups, the people with disability group, the Hispanic, Black, you name it.
Yeah.
But I could be Black. No, I could live using a wheelchair, but I could be Black. I could be gay. I could be everything. So in which box are you going to put me in? You know, of course, corporations need to measure things, to measure their population, to make sure that, you know, they are inclusive in all their ability to do so. But at the end of the day, we are all human beings. And I believe that if you really look at the person first and the skill that the person can bring, regardless of any other aspects, you can be successful in the inclusion policy. This is true for people with disabilities, and this is true for everybody.
You've spoken about intersectionality and you've spoken about the ERGs, which tend to work in silos. And so they're not actually looking at the commonalities, but they're creating those boxes. What are the things that you are most proud of in your personal and professional journey?
I'm so exceptional. So I'm so proud of so many things. Seriously, you know, I'm proud, I would say, to have a normal life. I could get married, I could have kids, I could have a job. So it might be, as I said, quite normal for many people. But for me especially, regardless of my wheelchair, etc., I could live a normal life, I would say, a more almost normal life. What we want to avoid as people with disabilities is to be regarded as heroes. Every day, I'm not waking up saying, I'm going to win the world today. I will be the best. You know, sometimes, like anybody else, I want to stay in bed. I would like to sleep half an hour more. And this is true for everybody. And so I really don't like it when I see people with disabilities portrayed as heroes. And our brain is maybe more connected or trained to identify solutions. This attitude of being a problem solver in our personal life may also help in a business context because we may be a little more innovative than others. The only advantage we have is that we may be more tempted to do more than others simply because we want to demonstrate to the employer that they were right to hire us and to welcome and to trust us in our ability to work for this company. That's what I would say the only thing I'm proud of. I have a normal life.
Brilliant. Do you have any advice for people with disabilities who are trying to enter the workforce?
Well, I would say two things. First, do not be afraid of failure. Failure is part of the game. As I said already, you'll learn much more from your failures than from your successes. Try to understand why you failed. Also understand that sometimes, as I said, people will never change. So you may not be responsible for this failure. You may be, but you may not be also. And my second is be patient. Be humble. Be diplomatic in your conversation with people. Always think about yourself. If you didn't have a disability, how would you react meeting with someone with a disability? Always think about it and be modest, be humble. Do not try to portray yourself as a hero.
Be yourself. That's some great advice. We come to the last question. You just spoke about that you don't think people with disabilities should be treated as heroes. They're just trying to get through everyday life. But we continue to do that because we see so few people, we see so little representation. Are you comfortable with being a torchbearer, being a spokesperson for the entire group of people? Or do you think people should just stop asking you these questions?
Well, originally, as I said, I just wanted to have a job and feel comfortable. But because of the nature of my current role right now, I am responsible for IBM's disability inclusion policies globally. Individually, I get some visibility in the market and I have to work to build my own brand. And so that's all right. You know, that's fine. As long as I remain sincere with my own identity, I don't play games. I am who I am. I have my failure and my strength. And if I can help anybody by being some sort of a role model, this is absolutely fine. As long as people do not look at me like, as I said, a superhero or somebody who was bragging about their disability, you know, honestly, I would prefer to be able to walk. I would prefer to be able to continue riding my motorcycle instead of having spent the last 30 or so years using a wheelchair. But this is a reality. This is something I have to live with. And so if my reality can help other people thinking, this guy is traveling, he seems to have fun. So he's using a wheelchair, but he seems to be a nice guy still. Maybe also I could also be able to have a family, have a nice job, and have enough money to live every day. After all, if you can do it, maybe I can do it too. That's where my role stops, I would say.
I'm going to ask you one more question. And I tend to ask everyone this one. What drives you every day? And how do you find your purpose? I mean, like you said, some days you don't want to wake up at the crack of dawn. Some days you want to think, okay, I just want to be in bed and hide in. But generally, what drives you?
Maybe this sensation, this feeling of being useful, of being truly useful. Because I'm not trying to sell things. I'm not trying to sell a message. I'm just trying to convey the right thing to do because I truly believe that what I'm saying, you know, our conversation today will not change the world. But maybe one or two people listening to us now will say, well, after all, we may be right. Maybe I should be more comfortable with myself. Maybe I should get out of my comfort zone. This really what drives me, saying that I could make a very small difference for maybe one or two people, but this will happen. And this is something that really drives me, continuing my job, both internally, professionally, as well as privately.
Wow. What a wonderful purpose to have. Thank you, Eve, for this wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I think people listening will find nuggets of advice that they could probably use in their own lives. Thank you for being here.
It was my pleasure, Sulan.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms: iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.